This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Today, on Things I Found Online, we are highly motivated to welcome motivational speaker Ross Schaefer. Are you motivated to get motivated?
I am.
How is the internet impacting the world of motivational and keynote speakers? Well, Ross is here with answers and inspiration, and we got questions. I'm Jamie Alcroft with Danny Mann and your host, Louise Palenker. Oh, and Dana Friedman's here today.
Wow, sitting at the big kids' desk.
Yeah.
Dana Friedman.
Here you go, Weezy.
Before
take
we introduce
it away.
Ross, Danny, and Jamie have interested human stories. How was your Super Bowl weekend, gentlemen?
Oh, the Super Bowl. I missed it.
You did not.
Oh, darn. No, I watched it alone because you wouldn't come over and watch it with me. I had chips. Well, I had guacamole.
We had Seasons in the Sun.
Joy, fun.
There were a couple of amazing things about Super Bowl that some people know, some people don't know. So first of all, it was also Groundhog Day. Right. And you may have seen the Groundhog Day commercial they did on the show, which I thought was hysterical.
I thought that was really funny.
But the fact that the day was also amazing to people who are word nuts and number nuts.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was
right, the palindrome
Sunday.
Palindrome Sunday.
Okay. It was 02-02-2020, which is the same forwards as backwards. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't happened in like 900 years.
Right. 909 years.
And
actually,
it will happen again like in a century. But
in 101 years.
And for those people who don't know what a palindrome is, that's not where they held the Super Bowl, at the palindrome.
Mm-hmm. Sounds a like man, a plan, a canal.
Panama. Right.
It's a phrase or word that's the same backwards as frontwards, like radar. Or mom, or dad, or
Bob.
Or sentences. They're palindrome sentences. Yeah,
there
as
are
well.
there are whole paragraphs people have written.
Like a nut, a nut for a jar of tuna. What is that? A great bargain.
Exactly.
Same thing. Same thing.
It was also, it happened on the 33rd day of the year with 333 days left in the year, which is also kind of wacky.
That was wonderful. Numerologists
were
going nuts.
Where were you yesterday in Iowa? They could have used your math skills,
so,
I think.
Well, they're consulting with Florida right now.
Before we get to the caucus, which is another whole kettle of fish.
Wait, I just want to show the Zoom, which is the front, the GoPro, the front of our desk.
Yeah.
This is...
It looks like.
This is an Iowa gym floor this morning.
Well, Al Gore is a predicted winner, actually.
They halted the voting because a goat ate all the paper ballots, so they have to start over again.
So this is the
amazing part that no one else knows, because this happened to me. I'm sorry I didn't come to your party, Jamie, but I went to one that I had been invited to before. Friend of mine who I knew from voiceover, a guy named Bob Drew, who years ago was the road manager for the new Christy Minstrels. So this was the 50th.
That is a rough crowd.
This was the 50th anniversary of the last time Kansas City won the Super Bowl. And at the party, including him, there were four members of the new Christy Minstrels who sang at halftime years ago, and they were there and all rooting for Kansas City. It was
Art Podell there?
Art Podell was not there, but
from the new Christy Minstrels.
I don't have their names, but it was like,
do they break into song every time someone scores?
In past years they've actually played at halftime in the room, but they didn't this time. But it was amazing watching them and hearing the stories.
No wonder you didn't come over to my house.
Whose Super Bowl party were you at?
That's fun. I'm going
Dean
to
Martin's?
Drew's.
I did mention earlier, and you did. You
his name is Drew.
As always.
No, I'm trying to put on a show, Danny. I can't hear.
I'm part of it. I'm killing right now, and you're holding me back.
When I'm talking to Lane about technical things, and you're just throwing random pop culture trivia at me.
This podcast is kind of like being on a road trip in an old car with us.
Now I'm listening and caring.
His name is Bob Drew.
Bob Drew knows the new.
He was newish.
Christy Minstrels.
By the way, you know how we all track over the years, like, oh, this group broke up and they went to that, like Led Zeppelin's had five guys. There have been almost 300 members of the new Christy Minstrels.
Wow.
Wow.
I would join for a week just to be in
lots
that club.
Of people did, and some famous
that's a
people.
A lot of white bread.
Kenny Rogers came out of there. Kim Carnes, like tons of famous.
Name
people.
Name one hit that the new Christy Minstrels had.
Greenback Dollar was a worldwide hit. They were like one of the big.
Sing a bit.
And I don't give a damn about a greenback dollar. Spend it fast as I can.
because of wayward song and a good guitar.
The only thing that I understand, poor boy.
The only thing that I understand. Wait, you're ordering a poo boy. But you got to do that to order a poo boy.
All right, well, we're going to introduce our guest, mm-hmm. Ross Schaefer.
How's he going to follow that?
Trust me.
Oh, believe me,
I've been doing
will.
Some research. He will.
He's this done guy. More by the time he was 9 than I have done in my life.
I know.
So Ross Schaefer has bought and sold 24 different businesses, a profitable hobby he started at the age of 21.
He owned the new Christie Minstrels.
He
21.
Did. Bought and sold them several times. By 30,
hey, Louise,
he ventured into a different kind of business.
Sure, Louise. Louise. He's interrupting.
He's interrupting.
How old is your audience?
I'm Ross, this is the contracted intro that you mandate I read before you agree to appear.
No, the fact that we are talking about new Christie Minstrels is what he's referring to.
Yeah.
They're about our age.
Hey, how about that Fatty Arbuckle? He's coming up.
not if Huey Long gets to him first.
Yeah, hide the empties.
Wow.
Whoa.
Dark. Oh, it went dark really fast. By 30, Ross had ventured into a different kind of business, show business, collecting 6 Emmy Awards as a comedian, writer, and TV host of such shows as The Match Game on ABC, The Late Show on Fox, and Almost Live on NBC. And because Ross is obsessed with who succeeds and who fails, he's chronicled his findings in 9.
Nine? Count them.
Popular business books.
Oh, look.
Oh, what? My gosh, Ross.
Oh, wow. That is cool.
He's a prop comic.
You've written more books than Steve Allen.
Carrot Top.
In my
on market
pants.
Growth,
top.
Relevance, and the customer experience. But he is most proud of his best-selling cookbook. Do you have that one, Ross?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't have that one.
Cook
you have
like a
power
a
tool
stud.
Around?
We can go to it. Google this, Lane. Cook Like a Stud, semicolon, 38 recipes men can prepare in the garage using their own tools.
This was.
Please welcome the unconventional Ross Schaefer.
Yay!
That was canned applause, I think.
So, Ross, have you ever Googled the words motivational speaker?
Yeah, I have. And
well, did you know that what you find is you find the question. You know how when you Google something, it brings up the most asked questions about that topic? So, how to become a motivational speaker, ? And there's a list. Well, number one is you need to develop your ideas. You won't become a successful public speaker by rehashing old ideas in the same way as everyone else. Then number two, identify your ideal audience. 3, test your content. 4, gain speaking skills. 5, offer to speak
Ross,
for free.
Ross, you should be writing these down.
Have you done this one, offer to speak for free, Ross?
I did about 150 of them for free when I started.
Okay, so this is good. We're right on track
and
here.
He's not getting paid today.
But
and
I have to tell you, you can't make a list on how to become a motivational speaker.
Wait, then what is Google for?
Nobody should try to do this intentionally.
All right, well,
No one does it intentionally. Is that what you just said?
No, I don't think you should. I don't think you should sit down and think, I hate my job. You know what I ought to do? I ought to be a motivational speaker.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
ridiculous that people will say. What's the hot topic? What should I talk? There is no hot topic. There is no, and you can't go into this thinking that's going to be your goal. It kind of evolves, and it's something that the audience perceives. The person who's doing it doesn't perceive that.
So does your first motivational speech kind of happen because you're speaking, and then when you're done, you realize that was pretty inspiring? And then
you don't know. You'd never say that.
How do you evolve into a motivational?
You're 0 for 5, Louise.
Yeah.
He'll get
I don't know
there.
Who made
He'll
that list, but of somebody who's not working. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
No, what happens is that people come up to you afterward and you won't even realize it. You just said something that it's on your heart, something that might be in your own personal story. And then somebody will come up and they're crying. You don't know why they're crying. Or they may say, I never looked at things that way. I'm going to change my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stuff like that doesn't happen often. But then mm-hmm. they tell people or they buy a book or they do something. And then pretty soon you're kind of lumped into this group of people, which I prefer not to be lumped in that group. Here's a good example of this. Tony Robbins is a motivational speaker. People think he's a motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. I know Tony. He's a nice enough guy, 6'7", 275 pounds, sweats. It's too much for anybody. But
you've been that close to him?
All that
vodka.
Yeah.
And it's not good to be that close because he just cuts everything. But he's a guy who just sells enthusiasm. He sells like temporary Because people buy those books or watch the DVDs and they go home and they read them and then they realize, damn, I'm still me.
It's like a hit. Uh-huh.
He's so optimistic. If he ever went to jail, he'd tell you he lived in a gated community.
But I think what you're saying is that Tony Robbins is sort of like that lose weight fast diet, and you're more about an eating plan.
Yeah, I'm a tactical guy. I sell tactics on how to grow a business, how to motivate yourself, how to not quit. I'm really specific when it comes to the science of this, and there's no pablum. I don't try to tell you, you know what you need? You need to smile when you pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. And they can see the smile on the other end. I'm not that guy, but there are people who do that.
But what I want to know is, how did all this start? Did you write your first book or what? How did the career that you built for yourself begin?
Well, as Jamie knows, I started, before Jamie, I'll be really brief. As a kid, I was fascinated by anybody that could make money. And I saw that my dad could buy and sell junk cars and resell them. So I did that with bicycles and skateboards and little boats. And it was easy for me to make money early. So then by 17, I was flipping houses. When I graduated from college, I went down to the bankruptcy courts and started buying broken businesses. And they'll give them to anybody. You could go to today, you could go down and say, what business is bankrupt? And they'll say, do you want it? You just have to accept a little debt and you turn around, you can sell it. I did that a lot.
So you knew that you knew how to run a business.
Ulcer, switched to careers at 30 years old. And I haunted the comedy clubs. And I figured out that this is not a long story, believe me.
It's a great story.
Keep going.
But I figured out from watching people like Mac and Jamie on The Tonight Show, Jerry Seinfeld on The Tonight Show, Richard Pryor, and all these comedians. And I sat in my room in Puyallup, Washington, with graph paper and a stopwatch, and I tried to track how many laughs per minute they were getting. Phyllis Diller got 12, Bob Hope got 10, Mac and Jamie probably got 8 or 9. I got
7 and Mac got 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's how that worked out. Yeah.
And then what I noticed is that the laughs were good laughs. They were 3 seconds long. They sustained for 3 seconds. And so I tried that in the comedy clubs, and I had a bunch of crap jokes, and they would get nothing. They'd get stares. They'd get a little, like that. And I would just cut those out, string all the good laughs together. And I went from open mic to headliner in about a year. And I won a comedy competition.
So you know how to analyze and find patterns and then apply
that.
Can I jump back to the childhood end of it? Yeah. Because you had some ideas and hobbies and things you were doing as a kid that are not kind of typical kid stuff, like playing baseball or goofing around after school. Did you not do those things? And were you kind of a loner?
No, I was insecure because my parents moved every 2 years because of my dad's job. So I had to learn how to make friends in a new school every 2 years. There was that.
Uh-huh.
But I also for a time thought that I was going to play professional football.
I
played through high school and I played 4 years in college.
Nice.
And then tried out for the USFL, the Portland Storm.
Wow.
And I was approached by the guy who was doing what would be like camp, you know, the NFL does that. Then the coach came in and he goes, hey, you know, you got yourself a lot of heart there, Ross.
Aww.
You're just too short and slow.
So you bought the team.
Yeah. So
at bankruptcy court.
That was good. That got me out of that mindset.
Now, I'd like to ask a question, Ross, because I saw you in the early days and saw you doing stand-up. And actually, Mac and I wanted to do your show that you were doing out of Seattle. That was like one of our goals. To get on Ross Schaefer's show, Almost Live, out of Seattle. That was great. King Television, right?
King Television.
Yeah,
good memory.
Yeah. And now, when you were doing stand-up, you would get the laughs, and would you try to inject some sort of lesson or motivational thing? Not motivational, just a personal thing that may not have been funny, but what you were doing was going through the laughs in your act and finding little holes where you could actually inject meaningful dialogue with the audience?
I did that with my
How did that happen?
My kids.
You did it with
parenting.
Your kids.
early on. I did. I did it with relationships.
What, you would open like a hot 5 minutes and then go into.
And if my kids weren't laughing, I'd.
Well, you know what it's like in stand-up. Everything you write is material. So
sure.
You'll have 6 seconds of a setup and 3 seconds of a laugh or whatever that might be. And I thought about, and I was older. I was an older stand-up.
You were in your mid-50s then. That was 30 yeah. years ago.
So it was. So I would think about it, and I would inject some of my business ideas. For example, mm-hmm. I'll give you. There was a. I said I told the audience, you know, I own businesses, and you can too. I bought a stereo and pet shop, and I named it Woofers and Tweeters. So there was that kind of thing, and then I'd follow that up with, but don't get into that business because animals eat each other. Uh-huh. They do. You think they're predator and prey, but they do. They eat each other. You can't make money when your inventory is in a state of natural selection. So that was as close as probably I got to.
Yeah, but it was still smart. I remember you're such a smart comedian. What happened?
I don't know.
Ross, who hires you to speak? Because we were looking through your website. It's very impressive.
Yeah.
And the list of companies that have hired you to give keynote addresses, it's very impressive. But can you rattle off some of the
sure.
companies?
Fortune 100 companies like Chevron, Microsoft, Adobe. Haven't worked for Netflix, Amazon.
Do they have you back year after year? And
some of them do. Some of the associations. There are associations for everything.
Yes, there are.
You worked them all too.
Sure.
The associations like that. But I'll work. I'll sometimes have repeat every 2 years.
Right.
It takes you a while to develop material they haven't seen.
Right.
Well, now I've got several hours, and I can pick what would fit or most relevant to that group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's, I'm kind of in a fortunate position that
so
way.
So will the attendees be people from a certain department or people from a certain division or people that have won awards and earned themselves a trip, or who will it generally be?
Louise, it's all of that.
Yeah. Okay.
They have these giant meetings for salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll bring people from all over the world to have this big sales meeting, and they want to learn something new, something that they haven't had before. They've heard everybody in the world. So you have to really bring something
fresh. You do.
They haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And the bigger companies like Chevron, they did a Chevron event, and there were 1,700 people in that event. And they were their top tier award winning salespeople in the lubricants division. So there's a lubricants division.
Oh, wow, there. What great material.
Yeah.
Perfect. You got 40 minutes right there on lubrication.
Yeah. Sorry, slip of the tongue. Slip of the tongue.
You could do 2 hours on lubricants.
Who can't?
Who can't?
Now, Mac and I used to send out a questionnaire to our associations and our corporations that we worked for, whether Alcon or Xerox or Apple or who... a lot of car companies we worked for, but we'd always send out a questionnaire so we would know what their issues were and what they were talking about. Do you do that?
I do that. I asked them.
I thought I remembered that you did. Yes.
Yeah. I asked them what are the pain points of the people in that
audience? Exactly. Because that's where you get the humor from the pain.
The pain.
Give us an example of what a pain point might be.
Well, pain point is what here's a good one. This is a good one. This one was I just did this last week for a company called Five9. They're a large cloud company, and they manage call centers throughout the world. So a pain point for them is, what do we do when we have an outage, a power outage, and nobody can use the call
mm-hmm.
service?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so what I suggest, my suggestion, you want to hear the suggestion or?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're here for it. I said, how often do you rehearse your complaints? they go, what do you mean? Well, you know this is going to happen. Power's going to go out, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you need to rehearse what you say when that happens. There should be DEFCON 5 or DEFCON 4. And you're already prepared. When the customer calls up and said, you know how much money we're losing? Our call center's down and we can't service these people. What do we lean into that, first of all? And when you know there's a power outage, call them before they call you so that mm-hmm. they know, oh man, I really am important here.
It's like but heckler
call
ammo.
Call him and tell him your phone's not working.
Yeah, call him.
It's heckler ammo.
Yeah,
you
it
gotta
is heckler.
Be loaded.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that would be
an example.
That's great, yeah.
They didn't know so, that. You know, anybody like that performs knows you must rehearse.
And confront fact, it.
Right.
If you want to be excellent, you should rehearse a lot.
Yeah.
They don't think of that.
Yeah, so we would have corporate gigs, and we would, have the meeting in the afternoon to make sure that we were going to be clean and appropriate for their group, right? Oh, you've had those meetings. Yeah. And you're sitting around this big banquet hall, and they're talking about, you know, how clean you have to be and what the touchy points are, like, don't pick on John, but you can pick on Stuart. He's really fat. He's really, you know, and go for him. And Stuart, and they're always telling you to go for these jokes that, my God, if you did, it would just be death. You know, you couldn't do it. So, well, and they would always say, oh, well, we're really hurting. You know, we had a program that went down the tubes this year. So everybody's really upset about that. And, things are really tight. And I've had speeches with the employees about tightening their belts. And so Mac and I would get up on stage and we'd say, you know, we know you have to tighten your belts and things are really tight. And when we go through that, we do the same thing you do. We invite about 5,000 of our top executives and their wives to a resort in Hawaii for 3 days because we're in financial distress.
Yeah.
That's what we do. And that kind of alleviates things, doesn't it? And that used to get a laugh with a group. Here at the table, it didn't.
Not as much. Now, Ross, what are some
That's
of
not
the,
table humor.
What
it's
are
not
some
like
of the
magic.
Themes that you present? And do you let people sort through or do you suggest? Oh, I've looked. They did give you some.
That's a great question, actually. I have four or five different programs that I use as a menu.
Okay.
And they can, and by the description, they can say, yeah, we really need to know about how the customer experience has changed in the year 2020. And that's what POW versus WOW is, which is something that is working really well. Then another one might be, are you still relevant? And that scares everybody because most people aren't. Mm-hmm. And they're still, it's an example, I have a buddy who says this when one of his clients says, well, you know, I've been doing this since 1953, and I don't know if I need to hear what you're going to say. And my friend always says, oh, so Bob, you know what used to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob, I don't know if you can hear what
I've got
what
my
I have
carriage
to say.
Parked out back, and I'm going to hop on.
If you were in business
it.
In 1953.
Yeah. But then I will also, Louise, to answer the rest of your question, there are times when they don't know what they want. And so I have a prepared list of things that I think they might that might fit them, like how to future-proof your career or how to future-proof your company. And that's they're curious about that.
Ooh, that's a hook. That's a good hook, future-proof.
My thing and what they find as motivational is that I go to, I don't know, 80 of the wrong meetings every year. Nothing to do with my industry, but I will cross-pollinate something from the gardening industry to metalwork. Right? And then, because there are ideas in every one of these company meetings that are gold.
Common themes.
Go to those meetings.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think it was, we talked about this maybe, that I encourage people to crash the wrong meetings.
I love this.
What does that mean, crash the wrong meeting?
Yeah.
What that means is that it's a hotel where everybody lives, and take a notepad and a pen and just walk into that meeting. No one is going to stop you.
You can go anywhere with a clipboard.
You can see on the outside, they've got a little board that'll tell you what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just walk in. No one will stop you. And they say, oh, no, I can't do that. I don't have a badge. There are no badge police.
No, this is the Goldman Bar Mitzvah.
Yeah, that's right.
You could learn something there.
I do it so often.
That's great.
That I pick up things that 95% of my clients have never heard before.
That's fantastic.
That's great idea.
It's a really good idea. Are you aware of Amazon Go, that grocery store that it's called Just Walk Out Technology? You put an app on your phone.
It's like a mini bar, right?
Store,
the world is like a mini bar. You just pick things up and move.
Yeah, that's what it is. You pick things up and then you walk out. There's no checkout.
I'm in love with the concept.
And it's I've been through it. It's unbelievable. Wow. So I was the keynote speaker at an Ace Hardware convention, and I'm showing them this little video that a lot of people have already seen about Amazon Go. And afterward, they said, oh, How come we're not doing that? At an Ace Hardware or a small store, they could pick up a basket and walk around and put their nuts and their bolts and a hammer and leave. We'd save so much money. Why don't they know that? Because they don't go to grocery meetings.
Oh.
That's right. That's right.
So okay. There's a lot of money to make and a lot of money to save if you go to these other... Can I tell one story about...
Please. Tell several.
No.
Okay.
I vote that he can.
Okay, two against one.
So I'm booked at the 50th anniversary of CVS Pharmacy. And so they're very proud about how there's 6,000 of these locations throughout North America. And so about 3,000 people are in this gigantic room in Toronto. And the chief operating officer stands up. And I'll try to recreate this. I don't do impressions, but I'll try to recreate it.
We won't know the difference.
No. Jamie's an expert impressionist, yeah. and so this will be embarrassing for him, not me. Yeah. So this guy says, "Hey, you know, we're doing a lot of good work out there in the customer experience area."
I just want to
tell you something new that you're gonna love. You'll get a letter about it. That from now on, we are no longer going to be putting the back pain medications on the low shelves.
Man, how considerate.
I heard it, and I thought, I'm going to use that joke the rest of my life.
It only took them 40 years?
It took them 50 years.
50 years.
50 years.
And as I'm leaving, as I'm leaving, people are talking about what this guy said. And I heard this associate say, I guess we should take the heel lifts off the top shelf, don't you think, Bob? Yeah.
Wasn't this all on a Bob and Doug McKenzie record?
Sounds like a show.
I had the same.
That was
experience.
A great impression, by the way.
I took really my good. Husband to the podiatrist. He's had foot surgery, and he's like, "Isn't it awesome that it's the first door?" I'm like, yeah, they've thought of everything.
They thought of that.
Great. That's smart.
Should have been drive-through.
So now,
drive-through podiatrist.
So your different topics, one of them is nobody moved your cheese. And right. I'm just going to get, let's have the panel guess at what that means. Go ahead, Danny.
I have a start on it in that I never made it all the way through the book, but having heard about the book, I read the original, Somebody Moved My Cheese. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm guessing this is a spoof on it.
Absolutely.
Or debunking it.
Oh. It was Danny was debunking it.
Yeah, it was. It did debunk it. It was wonderful. So I have a copy.
Ross, is it that you moved your own cheese? Is it about accountability?
No, it's about, I'll be really brief about this. So,
no, don't. We have an hour to fill.
Yes. Anyone says, somebody move the cheese, will you?
There was cheese involved. Come on, Louise.
Weren't you supposed to move it?
All right, go ahead, Ross.
No, go ahead.
So the story, this is a Spencer, I'm blanking on his name. Famous author and business expert, and I'll think of it afterwards.
So, boys, find Somebody Moved My Cheese.
No, it's Who Moved My Cheese.
Oh, Who Moved My Cheese. Okay,
and it was during this time when we were downsizing America in around 2002 or 2003, and it was very popular. And so companies were giving this out to their employees, almost like, "Hey, Danny, I think you'd really kind of enjoy this little parable, you know, on the off chance you lose your job."
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're supposed to go through this, like, I had a life, I was doing thing, and now everything's changed, and then what I was nourishing my family with is now somewhere else. And so the story was told through the story of these two mice, and these two mice. The idea is they wake up one day and the cheese is gone. Okay. And so one mouse says to the other, "Where'd the cheese go?" He says, "I don't know." But the other mouse says, "I think I'm going to go look for it." And the other mouse says, "Well, I'm going to stay right here and wait for it to come back." Yeah. Well, here's the ending of the story. The one mouse finds the cheese somewhere else, gets fat and happy. The other mouse dies of starvation. What a happy tale that turned out to be.
Sure.
It's a children's book. So this is a big hit. And I disagreed with the premise. I thought, you know, nobody's moved your cheese. If the world's changing, it's up to you to find it. And don't listen to experts. Nobody is a better expert on you than you. And so I blasted Dr. Laura Schlesinger. I blasted Jack Welch and these cultural icons like Tony Robbins that were supposed to give us life advice, but we can't really take it because we're not them. Right. One of the things, you know, this book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's in the guy's name? How come I'm blanking on names?
Spencer something.
Oh, we'll Google it. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, it was so these are the seven things you and I are supposed to do in light if we want to be effective, if we want to grow, if we want to scale our lives, if we want to get better.
We want to be highly effective.
It sold 20 million copies.
Yeah.
And then 16 years later, he puts out a book, The Eighth Habit. Like it just occurred
Oops.
To him.
Oh, that's like the Book of Mormon.
Oh, okay. Like, that's
More from Jesus. It's a sequel.
That's Mel Brooks. Take these 15, these 10 commandments.
That's right.
All right.
What were the other five?
Stephen Covey.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So what made him?
There it is. Stephen Covey. Yeah.
Was it an epiphany? He woke up and said, "Oh, one more thing."
Yeah, that was it. But okay. It took him 16 years later to come up with the other
old habits die hard, new habits get born late.
Yeah.
Somebody write that down.
Or no, he ran out of
soil
cheese.
Soil easily.
He needed to sell another book to buy more cheese.
No, but the two mice were trying to churn butter. And one, Christopher Walken wrote this, rewrote the book.
Christopher Walken.
I want to mention, Ross, something that you must know. I know that you're so much more than a motivational speaker. You're just a really interesting, thoughtful, introspective person who has a lot to share. And so you speak about it. But I have found that on Twitter and let's say in LinkedIn, that motivational speaker and life coach may be the two most frequently found professions in Twitter bios. Are there a lot of online posers, do you find?
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, I know there are. And they spew things that, number one, they've not done themselves. They haven't accomplished anything themselves. Mm-hmm. They haven't built a company. They haven't hired anybody. They read a lot of other books and steal the material from other books to put on some kind of a show in front of the Kiwanis Club. And then they get somebody says, "Oh, you know, that's pretty good. You should speak for the Lions Club." Then they do that. Pretty soon,
they
start calling themselves a motivational speaker. But you can't do that unless you really moved somebody.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. Yeah. And the only way you move somebody is you get to them emotionally at a time in their life where they happen to hear the right thing at the right time.
And need to buy a book.
Now, question, isn't that kind of a slightly different thing? Because the life coach thing, I think, is a smaller cottage industry where they
take one-on-one.
And they take courses and like some of it's phone coaching and stuff. Because I actually know some people that have gone into this and seems to be doing well and they seem suited to it. It was kind of second careers for both of them.
I'll tell you this right now, that a life coach wouldn't ever be as funny as Ross.
It's a different thing.
It's a different thing. Yeah. It's
does
more
anyone
like a
ask you, Ross,
thing.
For one-on-one life coaching?
They do, but I don't do it. I don't. Number one, I don't have time.
No, your phone would never stop ringing.
Right. Well, and because this is going to sound awful, I'll say.
Go for it.
All right.
Please,
So I hosted a couple of game shows on TV.
Yes, yeah. You had a hosty.
I remember the Match Game. Excited
match,
we were.
Match Game, and there was one called Love Me, Love Me Not that we did 130 episodes. Nobody ever saw them. But there are game show freaks who love game shows. They just live for game shows. And they will stalk you. Most of them are very nice, but there are some out there that...
game show stalkers?
They're game show stalkers.
See, the internet allows these fandoms to collect. And as they collect, they generate their own sort of inertia because there's power in numbers. And they get each other all jacked up on the thing that they love. And they share little bootlegs, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's always been these pockets of people that were like into stamps or whatever. But they didn't know anyone else that was into stamps. They were just sort of into stamps. But now,
that's right.
If you're into stamps.
But I fear that happens with people who need a life coach. I think
that was very motivational, Ross. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. Once they know where you live or they know your phone number, then they show up like Bill Murray and What About Bob?
Yeah.
So what do you what
baby
do you,
steps?
What do you? I love that movie. What do you do then when people are a little bit too interested in the work that you've done?
Well, I have rehearsed that. So what I do is I have a lot of online resources that they can look at and that are free, that if they're really interested in changing their life, or if some of them want to be professional speakers, some of them want to be motivational speakers, some of them want to be consultants. And so I have a lot of things that I've written and resources or links that they can study And then I tell them they can. I have 145 videos on my YouTube channel.
That's yeah,
right. We address that. You can look at that for free, and then I give them other people that they can look at for free. So then they have that. I try to give them value that they can go off and do the study on their own. It's really hard. Mac and Jamie would know this too, where people would come, hey, you know, me and my buddy are pretty funny. We like to start a comedy. How do you start that comedy team thing?
Yeah. We want to do that.
Well, it takes 25 years. You haven't got 25 years?
Exactly.
All right. We're going to take a look at your YouTube channel, Ross, when we come back from this commercial break.
Oh, good.
Hello, my name is Jacob.
And I'm his co-host, 5-year-old Olivia.
Do you have kids?
And are your kids curious?
If you answered yes, you should check out Curious Kid Podcast, a weekly educational podcast for curious kids and grown-ups. Every week we learn about another topic.
We've already learned about spiderwebs, batteries, the moon, and so much more.
You can find us at CuriousKidPodcast.buzzsprout.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We will definitely do that. We will take you up on that offer. Mm-hmm. But right now we're going to go to Ross's YouTube channel.
YouTube.com/user/RossSchaefer. Because we finished guitar heroing the ad.
We did. We lip-synced it. So explain what's going on here, Ross. We go to your YouTube channel and what will we find?
What it is that... with my clients, when I give a speech, or I want to give them something for free. I want to give them access to these videos and free books so that they can follow up, because they always say, hey, do you have any videos? Because I want to show some videos at meetings and I can't afford for me to go there to do it. So I put up these videos, and some of them are 3 minutes long, 2 minutes long, 4 minutes long on a variety of topics they would want to watch.
I've watched a lot of them.
So let me really see. I'm good. Looking at it. Topics include hilarious change management speaker. Oh, that's you. The skill of self confidence. Oh,
we all need to know that.
So what is the skill? Let's teach us something, Ross. What is the skill? Oh, I didn't know.
Can we click and watch it?
Is a skill. It comes from within, but can it be learned?
That's it. Well, yeah. It can be, I would say again, it would have to be practiced.
Okay.
But people want to have confidence without practice. It's ridiculous to think that.
Do people want instant cures as opposed to a pattern, blueprint to develop over time?
Danny. That's a brilliant segue to something I would, because I'm going to change the content on my, I'm going to add new content to the YouTube channel, and I call it two words of advice. And so there are lots of two-word phrases in a minute that would be that instant fix. For example, can I give you one?
To give us several.
All right. So this has a little story to it. And on one of my TV shows, I wanted to get Bill Gates as a guest. He was very hard to get as a guest. I knew somebody who we tracked him. I knew somebody who finally knew somebody who had a girlfriend who was his assistant, and I convinced her that, can I just get in? I just need to see him for 5 minutes. I want to make a pitch, be on the show. We're in Seattle. He's from Seattle, on and on and on. I get in. And as soon as I open the door, he's standing at his desk. And he looks at me and says, Ross, be brief.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I thought,
he says what he's thinking.
Now I'm putting things. I'm trying to cut and paste in my head. What can I say? By the time I figured out what I was going to say, he said, I'm so sorry. I got to run to another meeting. So I never got him on the show.
Yeah.
But there are things.
You have a stalker.
Like, But be brief is one of those two words of advice. Mm. Be brief when you write an email, when you write a text, when you're trying to tell a story. Mm-hmm. Don't take forever. Get to the end of the story quickly. When you're trying to communicate to your boss, be brief. So that comes up over, that recurring theme comes up in several examples.
You have a trick-or-treater.
Yeah. Here she comes.
Oh, that's my daughter, Lolo.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Can we
say hello?
Doing a podcast.
Can we meet her?
Yeah.
What's her name?
This is Lolo. Lauren Ray is her name. Do you want to say hi?
Hi.
Poke your head down.
Hi, Lauren Ray.
You're adorable.
We're so happy that you're related, because otherwise this could have been evidence for
something. He was telling us about his stalkers, and then you showed up.
Yeah, that's right.
So we were like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
someone's at the door.
It happens hourly.
Perfect timing.
If you need your dad, go ahead.
You need the keys to the car?
No, you can't stay out till 11.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, well, can you ask? This is one. This this is this is dance.
This is real life. This is awesome.
This is, I forgot about dance.
Is she grounded?
Uh-oh, she's got to go to dance.
Okay, sorry, Lolo.
Well, if you have to get her to dance.
No, she has a best friend who lives around the corner.
Oh, okay.
And they both go, and let me know if you get a ride.
Scheduling conflict.
Yeah, scheduling conflict.
Well, that's where Uber comes in handy.
Oh, she's too young.
Throw your kids in an Uber.
Child.
Yeah, we live in Colorado.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, you're in Colorado.
Yeah, he's in Colorado. So pick up that thought, Ross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be brief.
So pick up the thought. Well, sorry.
Oh, yeah. All right. So anyway, be brief is one of them. And so that is the 1 minute lesson on be brief. When I played football in college, we had a coach that if you got down, you got hit, you got intercepted, you whatever. He was 6'5", 280 pounds. And he'd run over and he'd go, so what?
So what?
Scream at you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And if there was, and what that lesson was, and I repeated many times in the lesson, is that there are going to be a lot of disappointments.
Mm-hmm.
And just so what? Can you live another day? Can you just carry on? Everybody makes mistakes, but you can recover. And that was his point. So yeah. There are a lot of those kinds of things that I want to teach for that instant fix that you're referring to, Danny.
Mm-hmm. Two words.
But you're,
that's
see,
great.
Ross, you're astute because you're able to identify those moments in your life where someone said something to you that you need to take note of and use.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that, yeah.
He's been paying attention.
Yeah.
Paying attention, but you know, that's like that's a kind of a comic trait in that when you hear a family joke or you hear something funny that someone said, you make a mental note or you write it down from a little notepad so you can use it or steal it later.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done that as I think everybody who studies comedy does that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my mother, I'll tell you this very shortly. Mm-hmm. My mom is hilarious at this. I had a nephew who was in trouble with went to juvie hall, but he didn't go to regular juvenile detention. He went to where the bad kids go.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And because he had done some bad things. So I hadn't talked to my family for a while, and I called my mom and I said, hey, how is Ryan doing? My mom said, oh, you know, Ryan wasn't even in that facility a week and he fell in with the wrong crowd.
The good news is I can get you a personalized license plate.
What, Glee Club was full?
Oh, that's so funny to me.
So Dina has a question for you, Ross.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
and it's very, very like millennial. Okay.
Whoa.
So brace yourself.
And not brief.
Yeah.
I love talking about millennials.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I developed another question.
Oh, okay.
While I was listening to,
it's very organic.
Okay.
This discussion, mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ross, I just was kind of interested. So you were talking about like going into the wrong meetings, and it sounds like you benefited a lot from being a comedian. And mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wondering if you have like a theory about like, is it important to have like hobbies and interests and like do yoga and like paint and stuff like that in order to like, does that contribute to like success in business and in work?
That, you know, that I've never heard that question before, but it's a great question. Yes. I think it's the reason that college is good, because you're exposed to all kinds of subjects, all mm-hmm. kinds of people, mm-hmm. cultures, ethnicities. And exposing yourself to anything, and Jamie Allcroft is a great example of this. He just soaks up life every second of his existence.
You're
and it
right
does
now.
Give you a more well-rounded life. Because if you cure, this is what I would say. I think it would be incumbent upon all of us to curate our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing about journaling is not to say, oh, you know what, I had some pretty good soup today, I better journal about that. Nobody cares about this. But what you should write in there is, what did I learn today?
Yeah.
Then you go back and you can read a book full of lessons or a book full of experiences.
And I found it helpful to write down what you're thankful for. Three things.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Every night.
Gratitude.
Of what you're thankful for.
Very good.
It helps.
Very good.
Yeah, I think it helps. And I think that what Dina was talking about is true, in that it not just that it makes you a more well-rounded person, but that you find these themes that they spread across every aspect of life. For example, last week we were talking about improv, and just certain rules of improv, yes, and is something that you can take through life, not just in a sketch, but in dealing with somebody that you don't. My dad would say, never back someone into a corner. You know, you give people their dignity. You talk through something. You don't talk at someone. You know, these things are to be fluid and to listen and to be collaborative. These are things that work across disciplines. And
didn't your dad steal that from Dirty Dancing?
No,
nobody backs baby into a corner. No,
but you didn't back baby into a corner because she couldn't dance that way.
Oh,
she had to be able to dance.
Oh, so your dad was ahead of his time.
He was ahead of his time. But what I'm saying is, you want to be someone that learns from everything you do, and then you find, if you open up your mind and your heart, you find that, oh wow, that what I learned in that discipline makes sense over here as well.
Cross pollinization.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Louise, you're just brilliant on that idea, because I think with improv, where you have to keep your mind nimble, and then something that you said is that you have to listen very carefully, so that you can respond in character or organically, which is that's like a talk show school rule. Is that you must listen to what the person said and then respond to that.
I'm sorry, what, Ross?
So I had this conversation with Dick Cavett once.
And nobody knows who. Oh my God, Ross, I want your Rolodex.
Nobody knows who Dick Cavett is anymore.
Dick Cavett came over for dinner.
No, wait a second.
I've understood maybe 30% of the references so
Dick
far.
Yeah, see, I know. You know, so Dick Cavett was a talk show host in the
wonderful talk show host too. I personal favorite of
but
mine.
But here's the lesson. I think this is a really good lesson for self-absorbed people, of which we have too many, and because Facebook has made everybody just feel so important that they deserve an audience.
Yeah.
Same with Instagram. But Dick said that he nearly lost his job at ABC when he wasn't very good at listening. He had a treasure hunter on the show, and the treasure hunter had figured out a way to drill 1,000 or 1,500 feet for treasure. Dick has him on the show, and this guy's a great character. Yeah, you know, we went down 1,500 feet, and we found this old safe. I think it may have been from Spain. And we got it up on the sand, and Dick... we had to get our torches from Australia to open that thing up. You're not going to believe what we found inside. And Dick says, do you have any hobbies? Oh, got to pay attention.
It's hard, though, because when you're doing things like running a company or hosting a show, it's your mind is on what's my next responsibility.
Yes.
It's not that you're trying to shut someone out. It's that you're trying to manage your life. And sometimes you just have to let go.
All of that is what Viola used to call Viola Spolin used to say, being in your head, as opposed to letting it go, being in no motion and just being in the moment. And
what do you think about that, Ross? I was actually wondering that too. Like Eckhart Tolle and, you know, being in the moment, like being mindful. Is that something that you incorporate into your work and your theories?
I certainly do, because here's what I learned from being a game show host. The game show host, or a host of anything, is that you're really an audience. You're a surrogate for the audience. So you have to, whatever they think of or whatever their perceptions are, if you're not tuned into it, you're robotic. And so I'll do my show on stage, but if there is a peep from the right or left, I will jump my own ship to find out what they want to know about.
Okay.
And then I'll just change everything. And because they see that I'm paying attention and being in the moment, there's an authenticity that causes them to, I don't know, pay more attention.
Sure.
Danny, Jamie.
Because they're the focus. You've given them the focus.
Yes, you've given them the focus. But don't you think, Jamie, I know this has happened to you and probably you too, Danny, that you go off script or something happens and then you start ad-libbing with an audience.
Right.
How hard is it to go back to your prepared material after they've been screaming over something that just happened in the moment?
Right. That you're riffing off of. Well, that's the hardest thing, is to know when to stop it. When to stop, because you want it to go on forever. You want it to last and last and last.
But you can go off a cliff.
Yeah, exactly. And then you go off the cliff. You know, so you got to screech to a grinding halt and let, and in a comedy team, I was lucky because I had somebody else to bail me out and he had somebody else to bail him out in that situation.
But I think what you do is you find a line that pulls you back into a prepared
piece.
And
that's the bailout. Exactly.
Right. You say something to someone that is going to pull you back into the next.
Yep. Just like in a play, when you go up on lines in a play.
Just so when I thought I was out.
Can I go back to Dina for a second?
Yes,
I have
please.
Another answer for one of her questions.
Yes.
About being in the moment, Dina, you know, one thing that I think young people really understand and try to capitalize on is experiences and then recording those experiences.
Yeah.
And so when they're somewhere where they think, oh my God, this is an Instagram moment. And they'll search out Instagram moments. Oh, we got to go over here. It'll be great for the gram. Oh, do this. That kind of experience becomes competition with their friends.
Right.
It's also fake moments. It's not real.
It is fake moments.
It's
right.
It's manufactured reality.
It's just recycled.
Right. Well, so like the original question that I had was regarding the hustle culture mindset and workaholism and stuff. And it seems almost like what you're describing is part of that. It's like the hustle culture isn't just like I'm going to work 60 hours a week and wear that like a badge, but I'm going to go to all these events, go to all these parties, go to all these opportunities for Instagram photos. It's like all like rolled into like one kind of intense, high pressure thing.
Yeah, and
so
also
I have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, people are competing with each other in real time. I think people have always been competitive in their 20s and 30s to get, you know, to jumpstart their career and make a name for themselves in their chosen profession. But now you can see where other people are in relationship with yourself, and you have all those frames of reference that can be disconcerting rather than just focusing on your own path. So how do you feel about that, Ross?
Here's how I feel about it. I think that's what it looks like on the surface. The leaders and the managers that I talk to don't have that same impression about that workism or even the hustle culture. Everybody has a side hustle or they're going to outwork somebody else. I think it is more systemic from this perspective. If you imagine that the millennials and the Z generation that's following them grew up on video games, and their first experience with achievement or success or, I really am validated, was playing video games, and then they'd level up in their video game.
Oh my God, that just like blew my mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they have this in their head to the point where they'll call their friend, what level are you on? I'm 13. How did you get to 13? I'm only on 9. Well, I've got a hack to help you. And then they collaborate together so that the one that's falling behind can now level up in the game themselves. Here's what happens. When you grow up learning that endorphin rush or whatever that is from that success or that motivation or whatever it is, now you're going to go to work. And your employer doesn't provide that for you because they weren't raised that way. They're going to give you a review every 6 months.
Right.
Before
there's
we tell
that
you you're any good.
Immediate feedback of how you're doing.
Yeah, the immediate feedback of running around and taking the pictures with your friends, being this, posting where I've been or what I'm eating, that delivers that same kind of quick win. And today in the workforce, there are systems like Scrum and Agile that organize small teams of young people to accomplish things in 20 days.
Oh.
And they get that. They don't get extra money for this, but they get a project they can work on and accomplish and feel successful after 20 days. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're 30 days. They do this. My son is the product owner of the Starbucks mobile app. So at Starbucks, they have these constant teams that are working independently to replicate what it feels like from a video game.
Oh, my goodness. That's fascinating.
Amazing.
You know, I ran a company for many years, Premier Radio Networks, Ross, and I kind of put together a little keynote speech of my own where I had 10 tips for success, and one of them is that, you know, I would get young people out of college that would work for me, and I would tell people, you know, you're not going to get an attaboy. You're not going to get any of what you even get in college when you turn in a paper and it gets graded. You're not going to get that immediate, like, how you did, and no one's going to compliment you or praise you right away. And also, if you're slacking off, nobody's gonna reprimand you right away, but everyone is watching you all the time. They know if you're proactive and getting things done ahead of being asked, and they know if you're flirting with the secretary instead of going and and getting to work. They know if you're leaving before a project is complete. They know if you're showing up early. They're just not saying it to you constantly. But just know that what you're doing is being noticed.
So be good for goodness sake.
Yeah, be good for goodness sake. And that's a hard one because they go from being...
It's its own reward.
They go from being disciplined or rewarded by their parents, and then the same thing with grades.
Yeah.
And then
you're,
and then the video games is just reinforcing all of that. And it's really difficult when you're in your 20s to be out in the world. And you're, at first you're thinking like, wow, I'm doing all this stuff and nobody cares. Or, hey, I didn't do this and nobody noticed. They do.
So, they do notice. You're absolutely right.
Ross, it's Dick Cavett here. Just curious if you actually have any hobbies.
He writes books. He writes a lot of books.
Was a beautiful Dick Cavett.
You know, that's so funny, isn't it? Interesting. You can do Dick Cavett impressions. Do you you know, another good dancer is that Doris Day. Have you ever seen her dance?
She's amazing. She's amazing. Well, what did he find in the treasure? What was?
He was just on Seth Meyers like a week or two ago.
Yeah, I have it. He wrote that wonderful, brilliant joke.
Yeah,
I loved
that brilliant joke. Can you do the Chinese?
I don't think
restaurant. The Chinese German restaurant. I went to a Chinese German restaurant. An hour later, I was hungry for power.
Which was that was Clint Eastwood at the same restaurant.
I'm sorry, that was a terrible impression. I know.
Did you know?
You're gonna have to teach me that.
This is me changing topics very subtly.
She's in charge for God's
fluidly.
Sake.
Yeah. Ross has written nine books. Books.
Read them to us.
No more customer friction. Success: it's on you. Behave like a startup. Absolutely necessary. Grab more market share. Are you relevant? The customer shouts back. Customer empathy. And nobody moved your cheese. Which of these is the top seller, Ross?
The Are You Relevant book I wrote in 2009, and that would probably is the top seller. Next would be Nobody Moved Your Cheese, and then my newest one is No More Customer Friction, which is I have to say I'm really proud of that because it's a revolutionary idea to raise customer satisfaction scores. That has been long necessary, and it's finally found its time.
So is this, Ross, because everyone now is a critic, and everyone can go online and is invited to do so after every transaction? Now I'm given homework. You changed my heating filter, and now I have to give you a report card.
Please like me.
But is that the reason why that book is popping right now? Because
I think so, and it's because I recognized something that other people hadn't recognized. What you're describing is, I'm going to use a Jamie Allcroft line, when they give you this homework, it is the hors d'oeuvre you did not order. Remember that, Jamie?
Yeah.
So I'll be brief again on this. Wow versus pow was something that I came up with because I'd been making HR training films on customer service since 1996. And we'd all hear about the customer experience. Oh, there's customer empathy. I wrote that book. Then there's, what about the customer effort? And all there's all, well, it's too hard. It's too hard to keep track of. It's too hard to measure. And so I said, I really underthink things. And that usually works out for me. There's got to be
I've never
way.
Tried it.
There's my motivation. Well, because, you know why, Danny? Because complex sells better. Yeah. But it's... If we underthink, we find the solution. So for years we've been hearing about this, we got to wow people, we got to wow. And it turns out since we've had this on-demand economy, Amazon and Netflix and Comcast and Xfinity, they don't raise the score. If you wow them, like you offer a bigger package on your cable, that doesn't cause scores to go up. So I started digging into the research of this, and in the metric companies who measure it, in their fine print will say, you don't have to delight people, you just have to make good on your promise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So what about, Amazon's a perfect example. Here's a $1 trillion company and they get the highest scores and we don't know anybody there.
No, we never.
We've never talked to anybody. They haven't built a relationship with us except they don't make mistakes.
Right. There's no trust, just consistency. Yeah.
It's consistency. So I labeled it the pow moment when you disappoint people.
Boom. Okay.
It's a gut punch. It's a kick in the groin. It's whatever it is that you say you're going to do something. You don't return a phone call. You don't return an email. You're sloppy. You said something. You didn't follow up. And scores go down. If you fix all of those things, scores go up. And one example is, I have a client in Kansas, the largest power company in Kansas. And so the power line people who are the heroes in the night, who turn your power on during a storm.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
These guys are pirates. They're just fearless. And they'll go on electrical lines. They'll cut their trees down. Well, here's what happens. They had this company, Westar Energy, had the lowest scores in the history of electricity. And I met with them and said, we've talked to your customers. And when you turn the power on, you drive your double axle truck through their favorite rose bush. You don't do anything about it. When you cut down the limbs of their favorite tree, you don't pick up the limbs. And your customers hate you. And the power line people say, yeah, we hate them too.
Wow, it's like politics.
Oh my gosh.
So I taught them wow versus pow. And I said, here's the reason to be nice to people.
Nice.
Here's the reason you don't have to do anything. You don't have to give people an extra flashlight or any of that stuff. In 90 days, their JD Power customer scores went up 21 points.
Wow.
It was just, it was so simple.
These are parenting skills.
A new hire got it, and
they are.
A senior executive got it. So the underlying aspect of that was, I'm Blackfoot Indian, so we would have powwows. Oh. And the whole point of a powwow was to get the nations together to solve their differences.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so now in 2020, it fits again.
But the smoking in the teepee helps.
The electrical company was thinking, if their power's down, then they can't go online and give us a bad rating.
Oh.
Yeah, they might have thought that.
That's backwards thinking.
No, it's but you make sense.
Now there is an app. Because of that, they have an app that can tell them which areas are down.
Oh.
And they do reach out to customers and say, you can get this app, and it will keep you apprised that your power will come on 215 or something.
Then that's really helpful. Cool. People just really kind of want to know when, instead of just being left in limbo.
Yeah.
Ross, you coach and motivate some very powerful people and people with key roles in huge industries. What characteristics do they possess which you would most attribute to their success?
Discipline. They get up every day and they do the fundamentals over and over and over.
Even when it's not fun, and especially when it's not fun.
When it's not fun. But here's, I know this guy, Dave Hopley. He's the world's greatest basketball shooter. And his free throws, if you've ever tried to shoot free throws, his is 2,711 in a row.
Wow.
Without missing. And when he missed 27, 28, the crowd went, oh.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, what a disappointment Dave turned out to be.
But they sat there for it. They sat there for it.
Yeah. So Dave says, I think, something very profound. He says, when we have a certain amount of success, then we stop doing those things that made us successful.
Get complacent.
Yeah. Get complacent. And then you give it to somebody who hasn't trained like you have, and then the company's at risk for tanking.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who have the best discipline to continue to do those things are the ones that I see that they make the most money, they have the most power, they are the most inspirational.
Hmm.
They lead by their own example.
By example.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard that commentary. I'm a big hockey fan, and I've heard interviews with young guys coming up, young stars, blah, blah, blah. And they'll talk about the old guy in the room that the team has there that's kind of winding down. But they say, I watch him every day in practice and every day in the dressing room, because just his work ethic and what he does, mm-hmm. and how he stays in shape. And I realize, God, I need to work way harder if I want to have that career.
Yeah.
And those guys have learned from experience. But do you have to take that?
What I
tell? No. She's good. You got a ride?
Thank
you. Yay!
Ah, good day.
She's going dancing.
Everybody's happy for you.
We were worried sick.
Lola's going dancing.
Love you, girl. See you later.
We just like you, but we can learn.
Ross, what I tell young people is, if you want to start something, you need to be working twice as hard as the next hardest working person on your team. You don't delegate what you're not willing to do yourself. You've got to work twice as hard so that everybody feels inspired by you, instead of like, oh my God, this guy expects us to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be.
Great advice, Louise. I think I have two sons, they're grown sons. And when they got out of college, they were scared about going to work for somewhere. And then they said, well, I don't know. How do you be sick? People already have that job. How can I be better than them? So, well, you have to not watch TV at night and really study what it is you're supposed to do.
Oh, forget it.
Make your goal to be the best. Nobody fires the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, but what if your company goes under? Their competitors want to hire the best.
That's right.
So there's no excuse for failing, I don't think. I think you just have to be whatever your profession is, figure out the science of getting to the top of it.
Do you ever talk to people about the value of failing?
So, like, people, I do talk about failing upward.
Because there are people that failing.
But you fail while trying, because it's a lesson. Then it's a lesson.
Yeah, then it's a lesson.
But you don't fail by sitting on your couch and calling someone else and asking them to do it.
You can't fail.
Right. But I'm just saying that people have learned. I've heard people talk about, until I failed or got fired from this job, or I didn't, they ended up learning and were that much more powerful from it. And you're going to fail.
But it's like, we go back to the video game, Danny. The way that you pass the level is you fail the level several times and then you learn how to pass the level.
Right.
Yeah, that's really true. It's you can't take your first idea and you can't give up.
So do you find, Ross, when people operate at such a fast pace and high responsibility level, do they tend to lose sight of the human element?
That's a great conversation that's happening now. There is a term that's being bandied about now in corporate America called humology.
Wow.
And it's the marriage of humanity and technology.
Okay.
And so all companies now, when technology came about in this big way where it was doing all these other jobs for us, and these SQL stored rules were, I push a button, oh, hey, here's something else you might like to buy. All that happened, then humanity was starting to atrophy. And companies figured out that, oh, wait, the general public hasn't really caught up with us yet. We should pay attention to them. And so now there's a push, even in Silicon Valley, if you know how to code, that's just the entry exam. Mm-hmm. You better know how to communicate with people.
Right.
You better try to understand how to listen. You're going to have to learn how to sell your idea upstairs. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to be able to collaborate with other people. You're going to have to be nice and not just sit in a corner and work on your projects.
Like in any business. So
mm-hmm. That's the number one skill that they're trying to find now. And I had an interesting observation about this from Bruce Nordstrom, who was in that Nordstrom family of department stores. Mm. And he had just turned it over to his son. So I interviewed him for one of my books. And I said, you must have an amazing training program there. They give you the clothes. You give them money back. If I don't like the shirt, even if it's out of date, you'll still give my money back. And what kind of training do you do at Nordstrom? And he said, we really don't do any training like that. We leave all the training up to their parents.
And hire the
wise.
Right people.
Yeah. Yeah. That goes back.
So what they're looking for are people who are servant hearts, people who care about other people. Mm-hmm. They love the Midwest, where some of these kids had jobs and chores home on the farm. So that's what they look for.
Yeah. Well,
and that's what Silicon Valley's looking for.
Well, I mean, when I think about it, like when you're talking about people who went to really fancy private schools and elite colleges and stuff like that, historically there's just been like a lot of focus on like success and like academic success and winning. And it's sort of like, kind of, you know what you're saying, Ross, is like you get to a job with that kind of experience and you're just like, you're not a team player. And you know, a lot of people who are like in tech and in Silicon Valley are like, they come from that background, and it's probably you know, someone somewhere realized, okay, this isn't like the most conducive to like ultimately to like the success of our business
being on a team.
That's a good observation, Dina, because now they're force training them to collaborate so that they have these scrum and these agile teams that can do mm-hmm. that. I'll bring up this 5-9 example from last week. They were a tech company, and the senior leader, the CEO, is 44 years old from Cisco. And so he has built this collaborative team building company where if my customer's complaining to me, and I can't answer it, then I'm going to bring in Suzanne, and Suzanne's going to be on the conference call from Indiana. And if Suzanne can't fix it, then we're going to call the vice president, and he's going to get on. And so they have this idea that we're in this together, so let's fix this together, or let's grow this together. They don't sit in a room with five board members and decide anything.
That's great.
Yeah. There's something that I learned growing up in Indian reservations, and that is if you want to be successful in the hunt, you have to follow the tracks of the herd. If you follow the tracks of the herd, you always find the herd. Then you study the herd to anticipate where they're going to go next year. Where do we go to hunt? So there's that fluid kind of, the herd is more important than me. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to teach sure. that now in corporate America, so that it's the teamwork really is the only way that you can compete today. It's too fierce to have these people be solo. And
we need groupthink.
In younger generations coming into the workplace and stuff, is entitlement become an issue? Like kids that have grown up in entitled
it's environments? It's so funny you say that. You know, that there's entitlement with millennials.
He was trying to be funny.
There's not with the Z generation behind them. You know, and Jamie, you grew up in, he was in England. England calls millennials kippers.
Kippers?
Like the fish?
Yeah, like the fish.
Like pickled herring.
No, it's an acronym.
I thought it was like the fish.
Oh, no, it sounds like it. But the acronym is Kids in Parents' Pockets Eroding Retirement Savings.
Somebody set up all
so
that.
They're so clever over there.
They're great. Know, they do great fish
Dina,
jokes.
This is what I have to tell Dina. The millennials now, people aren't talking about them as much because they're the first ones to turning 40 years old this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell so me about it.
They're experienced. They're savvy. They're going to lead the world's greatest companies. And so it's time for the old guard to turn it over to them so they can scale it much higher.
Okay, boomer.
The hell you say?
Yeah. Okay, boomer.
Margaret Ross, can you give any stories about the feedback that you receive from people who have watched your inspirational presentations?
Yeah. If I can put my modesty aside for a
Please
moment.
Please do. Just once.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, that was funny.
We edited that out already.
Oh, you already
yeah. yeah. Your modesty was so sudden.
Go ahead.
Those little videos are being seen. This is complimentary. I'm flattered that Harvard Business School watches those videos. Columbia University.
Wow, I'm not surprised.
Kellogg School in Chicago.
Not surprised.
Purdue. They use them in classrooms as kind of a best practice from the ground up.
Fantastic. Have you been offered professor emeritus at any of these schools?
I am an adjunct professor at the University of Washington.
You are? Okay. And you actually lecture?
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
but do people ever reach out to you and
that's
contact
great.
You and tell you how their life has changed or how they have rethought the way they're doing things?
It happens in the most peculiar ways. Mm-hmm. There was I spoke to the they got two different names, but it's the largest insurance.
Stephen Covington.
It's the largest insurance meeting in the world, and there are MDRT. It's the $1 million roundtable, and there are 20,000 people in this crowd.
Wow!
And so 10 years ago, I spoke in Vancouver, British Columbia, to this group and was talking about relevance and talking about how to not necessarily pay attention to experts because you know yourself better than anybody else, etc. And I spoke this past year, so it was 10 years in between. And a woman came back, was escorted backstage, and she said, I was one of those 20,000 people in that audience, and it was my first year in insurance, and after I heard you speak, I realized that I could do this. I could really do this on my own. And I've been watching your career. I've been listening to your videos. And she got an award at that conference for like the third best in the world.
Wow.
And she lives in Thailand.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So she was watching them from Thailand.
Oh, wow.
And paying attention from. So that meant a lot.
Universal wisdom. It's
that's
universal wisdom.
Well, but I think that's with anybody who watched a podcast like this, Louise, or ever saw one of your shows, Jamie, that you just never know how you're going to impact a total stranger.
Sure.
Right. You know. And I think that's true for all of us as we walk through the world. If you smile at somebody and say, how's your day going? That maybe that's the only nice interaction or pleasant interaction they've had in a little while. You just don't know. We're all impacting each other constantly.
I'll pass this along. My father, who's gone now, he's been gone since 2011. He never saw the 9/11 attacks, but he would say, I want you to go through He said, I want to know who you are when you don't think anybody's looking. That's
right.
One thing.
I love that.
And then he said, because you never know when somebody comes up to you if you're entertaining an angel.
Aww.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's right. I like
that. Beautiful.
I thought it kind of makes you think about people differently.
It sure does. I think that's beautiful, and it's a lovely note to end on. I want to thank you, Ross Schaefer, for being with us today. And let's go to rossschaefer.com. Or what is the URL of your website, Ross? So make sure people.
It is. It's rossschaefer.com, and Schaefer is Schaefer.
As it should be spelled.
Yes, don't
for
throw
anyone who's
in
spelling
there.
It differently.
Well, yeah, because my ancestors got lazier and lazier through the generations.
We don't need.
Oh, there! Look at there. There it is.
We don't.
Yeah, it was originally Schaefer-esque Walowalowicz.
Berg. That's right.
Thank you, Ross Schaefer. Our panel
what
is
great.
Our panel is Jamie Alcroft and Danny Mann.
Nice meeting you, Ross.
Great seeing
you,
Ross.
Guys. Thank you so much.
Our producer is Dina Friedman. Our tech team is Lane McFadden and Thomas Hubbell. Our audio engineer is John Maddox. Our webmaster is Bill Filipiak. Our theme music is The Coffee Song by me, Louise Palenker, and John Maddox. I am Louise Palenker. We will see you next week. Be safe, be well, be kind.
B+.
B4.